thank you for downloading this mini movie review of Hereditary from 2018. I'm looking through the Wikipedia article on it. Pretty excited to see it. I've heard multiple things. I've heard it's kind of a movie that it seems like people either really like or really don't like. So I'm kind of interested to see what I'm gonna think about it. It's had a lot of hype. I follow a couple of things like horror related online, and people are always talking about it. I've seen a trailer a while back when I think I saw another movie at the theater, or somehow I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, it looks cool, but I haven't got around to seeing it until now. And so I rented it, and I'm gonna go in a second here and watch it, and I'm gonna turn the lights out and just make it all like a, you know, like creepy theater and see how it goes. But again, I've heard a couple mixed things. I've been avoiding, you know, spoilers and avoiding comments and reviews. Like if I listen to other podcasts that do reviews on it, I haven't listened to them yet. They're just still in my queue. Because I like going into a movie not really knowing a whole lot. I don't really like to even watch a lot of trailers. Half the time they give it away or they put the best part in the trailer. And I'm like, okay, well, I already knew that was coming. So anywho, 2018's Hereditary. If you haven't seen it yet, there will be spoilers in the second half here of the review, so go ahead and go watch it, you know, and then come back and listen to this, because I'm definitely going to get into it. So if you haven't seen it yet and you want to, go see it. So a little bit about Hereditary. Hereditary is an American horror film written and directed by Ari Aster, and this is his feature directorial debut. So we'll see, you know, that's exciting. We'll see how that all goes. It stars Alex Wolff, Millie Shapiro, Gabriel Byrne, Ann Dowd, and Toni Collette. The grandmother of the family dies. Apparently she has a lot of secrets, and they're haunted. So we'll see how that goes. It premiered at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival, January 21st, 2018. But it wasn't released in theaters in the United States until June 8th, 2018. So it's been, like 3 months or so. Yeah, and I haven't gotten around to see it. I saw a couple of movies, but yeah, I missed it out of the theater, and so I was like, well, I'll just wait till it comes out and try to make it spooky at my house. So that's what I'm gonna do. People have reviewed that it's kind of upsetting, that it apparently gets like real intense, so we'll see. I mean, I've seen a lot of horror movies, so it all depends. It's gotten a lot of praise, especially on Toni Collette's performance. It is apparently, according to Wikipedia, A24's highest grossing film worldwide, making over $79 million. The budget for this movie was $10 million, and currently, again, it's $79.3 million from the box office, so it did very well, monetarily-wise, it did very well. It runs for 127 minutes, so it's a bit of a longer movie than your standard. Well, I mean, for this kind of, if it's more of a psychological thing, I get it. It's not your standard, like, slasher, creature feature kind of thing that's usually, like, a nice 90 minutes or so. I don't mind a longer movie sometimes if it's engaging. But yeah, that's basically what I wanted to get into. I don't want to look too much into the plot or anything because I don't want to find anything out before I see it. But yeah, so I'm going to go watch Hereditary from 2018. I'm assuming it's rated R. Let's see here. Okay, yeah, it is rated R. Okay, that's what I figured. I mean, I figure if it's this intense of a horror movie, it's probably rated R. So I'm going to go watch Hereditary 2018. I suggest you check it out because I'm definitely going to be spoiling it in the next half. So here I go, and I'll see you in a bit. Okay, I watched Hereditary. I liked it. I wouldn't say I'd watch it again anytime soon, but I still really enjoyed it. It was a little different than what I thought it was gonna be. I was thinking the grandmother would be more involved in the story. So it starts out, the grandmother, who really wasn't that old, I mean, she was 78, but it kind of starts out with like her obituary and the family member she leaves behind, and that one of her children is deceased already, which would be Toni Collette's brother that you learn about later. And then it kind of opens up with this, it's kind of a neat shot. Toni Collette plays a woman named Annie, and she does fantastic in the movie. There's some scenes where it's just like gut-wrenching. It's so good. Everyone does really well in the movie, I think, acting-wise. I think it was really well done. Her job, I guess, is making miniatures, miniature houses, miniature things. It doesn't seem like she's making a whole lot. I mean, they have a really nice big house. It starts out in her art room where she makes all the houses, and it shows like a model side of their house, I guess, and it goes into the bedroom, and then the bedroom, like, comes to life, and they kind of start the movie, which I thought was kind of neat. So grandmother passed away. It's the family getting ready to go to the funeral. You have the father, Steve. Then Toni Collette plays the mother. Her name is Annie. And then you have the son, Peter, who's probably like 16, 17. And then you have the daughter, Charlie, who's 13. And Charlie is a little different. Besides looking a little different, she is a little more withdrawn. She likes to draw a lot in her books, and she kind of goes off on her own a lot in her mind, I feel like. And then she also does this click thing. And when I saw the trailer to begin with, I was like, that could be annoying. Because, like, even when I think when I saw the trailer, I was in a movie theater, and as soon as it was done, people were clicking. And, it was like, it's a Pavlovian response. Like, you kind of want to be like, after she's done. So she does that, mostly it seems like in times of stress or when she's, like, deep into thinking. So she'll click every once in a while, or a couple times, until someone stops her. They go to the funeral. There's more people there than they thought. Grandmother was very secretive in her life, and, you know, Toni Collette's character gives a eulogy that's a little truthful, which I liked. Sometimes, you know, a lot of funerals are always like, oh, they were such a good person, all this stuff, and I'm like, you know, she did it with some honor, but some truth. She was like, Grandma, my mother was secretive. We didn't have the best relationship. I'm kind of surprised all y'all are here. It is what it is. When they show the grandmother laying in the casket, she has this special kind of necklace on that has this emblem. Some of the people there seeing her body, one touches her lips. One guy's kind of smiling creepily in the background. Charlie has some sort of connection with her grandma. She's a little more taken aback by the death than anyone else. Because even when they get back to the house, Annie, the mom, she feels bad that she doesn't feel anything. Her mother and her never really got along, and she only lived with them at the end because she was ill. You know, even the son, Peter, felt that a little bit. The dad was like, I don't know, you know. Later that night, they go back to the house after the funeral, and Charlie is in bed and getting tucked in, and she, you know, tells her mother, like, who's going to take care of me now that grandma's gone? And her mom's almost, like, offended, like, we're here, you know? And she's like, yeah, I know, but her and her grandmother had a special relationship, and she mentioned something about her grandmother deep inside probably wanting her to be a boy. That's, I think, how she got the name Charlie, because later you find out her mother, the grandmother has a bunch of stuff stored up in one of the rooms, like a couple boxes of things, like pictures and stuff. And she had these placemats that had the names, and she had one for Annie, and then she had one for Charles. I don't think that was Annie's brother. I think that was meant for Charlie, but then she came out a girl, so then they named her Charlie. I'm not quite sure. That could be true, but it just seemed like, she was, her grandmother wanted her more to be a boy. You learn more about it later, which I'll get to in a little bit. Because this story is kind of involved. And this movie runs a good, like, I think it's like 127 minutes. So, I mean, it's a kind of a slow burn. It wasn't too bad. Towards the middle, it kind of dragged a little bit. Like I said, they got a beautiful house, a lot of wood trim and, like, pocket doors and stuff. It's really nice. Like, kind of out in the middle of nowhere up on this hill. I'm not quite sure where they are. Apparently it's cold. I want to say it's, like, on the East Coast or something, but they're, like, always wearing sweaters. And then, like, the little girl, Charlie, has, like, this pretty sweet treehouse that she's always in trying to sleep out there. And they're like, it's freezing, you're going to get pneumonia, you know, all this stuff. And part of it also seems like the whole family's a little bit just unnerved by Charlie a little bit, or just, like, irritated, which I can understand if you have a child who has, like, a special need or something, but it just seems like they're not super understanding. Like, it's just like, she's just quiet and kind of different. She likes to build little dolls and things out of different plastic pieces and just, I don't know, she's just kind of different. So Annie decides to go to a support group. I think some of it's because she feels bad that she probably isn't more sad. And she also knows they had a rough relationship. Grandma left all her stuff in a box, like I said, and she goes through, and there's a special note in there from her mother to Annie, and it says, you know, like, the sacrifices we make aren't as great as the rewards we're going to get, and, you know, I'm sorry about the relationship we had a little bit, you know, and stuff like that. But then at the end it said, like, love mommy, and I was like, oh, okay. So Annie was like, what, you know, and she didn't look any much more into the boxes. It was just like that and, like, a couple, like, scrapbooks and pictures and things like that. But she had a book on the note was in a book about spiritualism. So you're like, okay, well, you know, she was into that kind of stuff. All right. So she goes to this support group for losing a loved one. And this is where if anything, this movie gave me a lot of tension and a lot of just feeling the pain of, like, the mental history or possible mental history and cursed atmosphere around this family. Cause I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, the mental health awareness in me is like, oh, they all need some therapy, and just, oh my gosh, like, it was just, that's what was getting me the most in this family. I was just like, this poor family. Annie talks about her life a little bit to this group of unsuspecting people who by the end are just completely silent. Apparently, in her life, her mother had dissociative identity disorder, and I was like, okay, that's not that great, but okay. So she gave birth to Annie, she gave birth to her brother. Her mother was very distant. When her brother was 16, he hung himself and committed suicide and left a note saying it was all the mother's fault. Later, her father, who also had schizophrenia, starved himself to death, and that's how he died. And she's kind of doing this a little nonchalantly how she's saying it. I mean, she's upset, but I think she's more upset about the fact that she feels like she's to blame for some of it, like how she's supposed to support her family emotionally with all this stuff, and when she can't even deal with her own emotions, kind of thing. She, you know, she mentions that, and then later it got so bad with her mom that what happened is she got married to her husband. Annie got married to her husband. This is after her father and after her brother died. Things with her and her mom were very strained, and her mother was into some eccentric things and wanted, I guess, to maybe partially raise her son. She was like, I don't want you anywhere near my child. She cut ties with her mom up until about the time Charlie was born. So it was probably about, it was probably like 5 years. And then Charlie was born, and her mom was very interested. And by then, for some reason, her mom was interested more. And by then, they had kind of worked some stuff out. And then Charlie ended up having some sort of health problem that made her the way she is now. So then they were, I think, estranged maybe again for a little bit. But then her mother got sick with like dementia or Alzheimer's and moved in temporarily towards the end there. And that's pretty much where we're at now. And so again, everyone at the support group's like, right. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So she leaves there. She feels a little better, but she's just like, well, you know, I thought I'd try it out, see if it would help. You know, she's already had a moment where she thought she saw her mom standing in a corner, and that kind of freaked her out. And it wasn't even like it was a, that's when, you know, some of the scares were kind of starting to come in by then. And it wasn't even like the mom, like it was a glance. It was just like, she was standing there, like in the corner. It was like, oh, there she is. Like, you blink, blink, she's still there. And so just things get crazier and crazier. The little girl, Charlie, is back at school, and the teacher seemed like the teacher was helping her, but it did seem like she maybe needed an extra person to help her or something, pay attention. Because she was just working on one of her toys during a quiz. Like, all the kids are taking a quiz. She didn't even turn her quiz over yet. She's just there playing with her toy. And then the teacher's like, hey, you know, like, let's do the quiz. And she's like, okay. And then all of a sudden this bird hits the window and scares the crap out of all the kids. And they're like, oh, you know, and it was a pigeon. And so later, Charlie's out there. I was like, oh no. Like, she walks over to the pigeon and it's dead laying on a bush. And she takes out this pair of scissors and she cuts its head off. And they kind of show it, like it sounds like it's cutting paper, but it's like, ch-ch-ch. And I was like, oh no. And so she takes the pigeon head and she puts it in her pocket. Later, she's walking out into a field with the pigeon. She's got like a little ribbon strapped around it. Like, she's doing her own little ritual sort of thing. And she heads out to the field, and in the field she can see like a little bit of some fire, and there's like a white figure sitting out in the field. But before you find anything more about that, her mother comes running outside and is like, hey, it's freezing, you're barefoot, what are you doing, get back in the house. Nobody ever saw the pigeon head, but I'm like, all right. And so I guess she put it back in her pocket. She goes back inside. The reason her mother brought her back in the house, this part didn't really make a lot of sense to me. Her brother wanted to go to some party. He likes to smoke pot. You know, there was a girl he kind of liked that I think, you know, he's wanting to go, like, make out. So he asked if he could borrow the car. And you can tell there's some strain between Annie and Peter. You know, they're not, like, super, like, she doesn't seem like the most loving mom. But it's not like she is, like, abusive. It's just, she's standoffish. And so he's like, hey, can I borrow the car? They're having, like, this, you know, barbecue kind of thing, which really, it was more of a house party. His mom's like, are you drinking? And he's like, no. For some reason, I don't understand this at all. She's like, well, take your sister. And he's like, what? She doesn't even want to go. And she's like, how do you know if you didn't ask her? And then that's when she runs out to get her. And I'm like, why would you have him take her? You obviously know it's some sort of high school party. So why would you want your 13-year-old there who already has some sort of social disability? I'm guessing she was just sick of dealing with Charlie and wanted her out of her hair for the night so she could work, because she was in there working on her models. But it's like, it really, that part just didn't make no sense to me. Come on, what 17-year-old's going to take us through? I just wouldn't have gone, probably. I would have been like, I'll stay home then, you know, or have my friend come get me or something. So he takes the car out with Charlie, and they go to this party, and it's just teenagers. And he says there's no alcohol, but there's, you know, there's alcohol, and someone's making a cake, which I was like, all right. And they're making a cake and chopping up nuts, and then there's this music. And so right away, he's there and he's trying to, like, you know, mack on this chick that he likes. And she's like, whatever. And then he's like, well, I got some good weed if you want to go smoke weed upstairs. And she's like, all right. And so Charlie is going to come too. And he's like, no, you should just stay. He's like, look, they're making a cake. Go get a piece of cake and draw and I'll be back down. And I'm like, oh my God. He just leaves her down there. And he goes upstairs to smoke. They shoot to Charlie and she's eating the cake and just kind of standing around in the party eating the cake. And you can tell, like, she's having a hard time swallowing it. And what you had learned earlier that I haven't mentioned yet is she has a nut allergy and needs to have an EpiPen. Why she didn't have one with her when she went to the party, I don't know. If it was that dire, she should have had one. She had always have a pack on her with one. But again, I don't know. Her throat's closing up. So she goes upstairs and she can't breathe. And right away, her brother, who just took a bong hit, is like, oh my God. And she's like, I can't breathe. And her face has kind of got a rash on it. And he's like, oh crap, like that cake. You know, and next thing you know, they're driving and he's trying to keep it together. He's driving in the middle of nowhere. It's like completely dark. I don't see any streetlights. He's just trying to get to the hospital. The poor girl's in the back and she's flipping out because she can't breathe. It's getting worse and worse. And this is where the movie kind of really kicked off for me because I was like, he's driving really fast, probably like 80, 90 miles an hour down this dark road. She can't breathe. So she thinks if she rolls down the window and sticks her head out and opens her mouth, maybe it's, I guess some air will get down her throat, maybe clear it out. She's just scared. Well, as he's driving, it's shot really well, but she's driving real fast and he's yelling at her like, hey, Charlie, get your head back in there. You know, what are you doing? And then this telephone pole comes out of nowhere and hits her and the car skids off to the side. And like, I definitely felt it. You felt like you got hit in the stomach. I will give it that. That scene was pretty intense. I was like, oh my God, she's dead. She broke her neck and it shoots to the kid. And he does a great job here of just like, he can't even look at it. He just is sitting there and he's so beside himself. And so in a shock, he drives all the way back home with her body still in the car, parks the car on the side by the house, goes inside, quietly goes, well, I don't even think he falls asleep. He just lays down and waits till the sun rises. And then the parents start to wake up. And this part, I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so bad because the mom's going to look outside. She's going to look outside. And you hear the mom go, oh, I'm going to run to the store real quick. And he's still upstairs. And then she heads outside and she just loses it. And this part's really great. She did a great job of just being like so sick. Like she kept saying she was going to be sick and she was bawling and she just couldn't. And her husband was holding her. And what had happened is Charlie was decapitated. And so I guess her body fell back into the car, but it had no head. Then they cut to this kind of gross scene of her head out by the pole with a bunch of ants and stuff on it. Her poor brother is just, he's gone. I was like, okay, and then like a couple days later, or after all this stuff is said and done, he's just back at school again. And he completely looks like he's out of his mind. What are these people thinking? Why is he back in school? The son and the mom aren't talking. The father's kind of holding it together. Peter never really said he was sorry, but he also kind of blames his mom because his mom made him take her. In between all this, she kind of makes models of things in her life that she's working on, this big show that she's got a deadline for. In her sick mind, I don't know what she was thinking, but she makes a copy of the car crash with the little head and everything. And her husband walks in and he goes, oh my gosh, what are you doing? And she's like, what? It was, you know, it's not like it's real gory. It was just, I guess that's how she works through her feelings. And he's like, don't you ever let Peter see that. He's like, I'm like, what is wrong with this woman? It's like months later. It's probably like 3 or 4 months later. She goes back to that group, the support group. She thinks about going in. She decides not to. And as she's getting ready to leave, this woman who I really liked, named Joan, comes out and explains that her grandson and son had passed away a few months earlier from a drowning accident. And if she ever needed to talk, to let her know. She calls Joan and they meet up for coffee or tea or something at Joan's house. And they kind of get to talking and you learn that Annie has had some sleepwalking issues, manifesting somewhat violent acts towards her children. And there was one point where it's kind of reason why her and Peter aren't super close. She sleepwalked in there, and when she came to, she was lighting a match, and both her and her children were covered in paint thinner. And Peter woke up and screamed and never forgave her, and always has been weird with her ever since. And I'm like, I kind of get it. But she hasn't sleepwalked in a long time, so things are okay. There's a lot of weird things. The son is in school still and he hears the clicking sound, the clicking was a little annoying. I did think it was used well for like a scare effect because it would be out of nowhere and you'd just be like, oh, you know, and it would kind of freak you out for a second. And you're like, okay, that's kind of creepy. So yeah, all that's happening. She ends up running into Joan sometime later. Joan's super ecstatic. They're outside of like an art store. Joan's super ecstatic. She met with a medium and she knows it's crazy, but she could talk to her grandson. and you should come over so I can show you. And she's like, what? And so basically, Annie learns to communicate with the dead, or communicate with Charlie, at least what you think is Charlie. I'm not sure if all the time it was Charlie. I think sometimes it might have been the grandmother, or, you know, some other stuff. What I thought was weird is that right away Joan, she said she met a medium, but then it was like the next day and she was able to do it all by herself. Like, no one was ever there. It was just Joan, where I'm like, I feel like you would need someone to help you properly do it if you were gonna do that. And the fact that it's just Joan with like a candle and a chalkboard, and like it worked right away. Immediately Annie's like, well, I guess I'm a medium because I made it work. Because then she goes home and she takes her poor husband and son down there and scares the holy crap out of them, showing them that there is communication. That scene was pretty good, the whole communication scene there. And then it, you know, it doesn't end well. So I'm not sure what else she let out or anything like that. So again, this is, you know, it's still kind of dragging on a little bit back and forth. There's a really intense dinner scene where you learn about the true feelings of the mom and the son, and the dad again is still trying to hold it all together. He don't know. I'm like, this dad needs to just leave. He needs to just take the son and go. So it gets down to where, like, there's this little notebook that Charlie likes to draw in, and Annie gets this idea that if she destroys it, you know, maybe it will destroy whatever this is, or what, you know, because she ends up looking through some books of her mother's and finds these like really happy pictures of some sort of ritual where her grandmother, or her mother, is being reborn in this white dress, and everyone's wearing those necklaces, and even Annie has one of those necklaces. She just thought it was something weird her mom liked. And you learn that it's this demon that they're kind of conjuring or worshiping called Paimon. And he's apparently like a little mischief demon, or also like a warrior of Satan. You know, so she tries to throw the book in the fire. It lights her on fire. She's like, oh crap. She's basically just going crazy trying to figure this out. Her husband doesn't know what to do. She ends up finding this body up in her attic. It was not even, I guess she heard it, but it's like it wasn't stinking up the house or anything, but it was the headless body of, I assume, is her mother, because her mother's grave had been desecrated. And so the grandmother's body is upstairs headless. There's flies everywhere. There's like the symbol from the necklace up there. But her husband goes up there. He thinks that she's gone crazy, and he's about ready to call the police, and she's begging him, like, no, please, just, I know that if this book burns, I'll burn. Just kill me, and it'll all go away. I can't do it. Please do it. He throws the book in the fire, and it lights him on fire, and there's, like, a nice little, like, I mean, it's a good fire scene. Like, he goes up. So he burns to death. Peter wakes up, because earlier he had had kind of a mental break at school. Another reason why he shouldn't have been there. And he bashed his face into his desk, which was pretty freaky, in the middle of class, and just scared everybody. And so his nose was broken and he was just waking up. So it's dark now. So he's up in his bedroom. He just wakes up from whatever he's doing. And this is where everything kind of kicks into high gear. This is probably like the last 20 minutes of the movie. And this is like, I really actually liked a lot of the imagery. It messed with me. It was, you know, because he sits up, he's looking around, and it's in a room, and in the corner, up in the high corner behind him, is his mother. Because after the husband was burnt, something entered her. She's gone now, so she can climb walls now. She got the magic climb wall power, and she's up in the corner just sitting there, and you're just like, oh no. Like, I was like, that's not good. And then she like scurries behind him out the door, and he still is like, what? You know? So he heads downstairs, finds his poor dad has been burnt. He's really gone, this poor kid. He did a great job of just like losing it. And then up in the corner behind him again, this part was, there was a couple, see, the thing about this movie, there were a couple parts that kind of made me chuckle. I laughed like 5 times, and this was one of them, because the second time she's up in the corner, it's like she's barely hanging in there, and it's kind of funny the way she just like perched herself up there. So she basically comes down and attacks him, chases him. He runs upstairs into the attic, not knowing what's up there, finds the body and all the flies. And again, this is where things are really hitting the fan, because he runs upstairs, and this part really kind of freaked me out. He shuts the attic door behind him, right? So it's in the ceiling. And you hear this huge knocking sound, and you're like, well, what, did she grab like a broomstick? No, she is banging her face upside down on the attic door. I thought that was a great scene. It lasts just like a few seconds. And so he's up there, and everything's lit up with candles, and behind him, he turns around, and behind him, his mom has gotten into the room somehow. And she's hanging, and she's got this saw, and she's got it's in the back of her neck, and she's sawing slowly, like, through her neck and beheading herself. And then there's, like, these 3 other white demon-y figures, and then he just freaks out and jumps out the window and lands on the ground. And I assume he dies. And then there's always been these little flashes of light when stuff's happening. So this little light comes down and goes in and hits him, and then he gets up. So you can tell something's in there. He starts to walk towards the treehouse that's now lit up in this light. And his mom, she's headless now, I think. She just floats creepily out up the ladder into the treehouse. And so he follows her, and you get up there, and this is where it's kind of weird. It's definitely weird, because they kicked it into a lot of stuff by the end. And you find out, like you found out earlier, Joan's in on it. She's set this all up. Inside the treehouse, there's a bunch of people who are bowing. There's the headless body of the grandmother and the headless body of the mom. They're bowing. There's like a Jesus-type figure with a crown next to a pigeon thing, which I guess was part of the pigeon head thing. And they tell you that... You hear a voice, I think it's Joan, and it's like, thank you, exposition, because like, in case you didn't get it, she like explains it off camera. This demon, Paimon, needed a male body, so they had prepped... Okay, so here's what it is. They put the crown on Peter's body. Charlie is inside Peter. The Paimon is inside Charlie. So the Paimon has the body and is now the leader. I'm not quite sure what you get from worshiping this Paimon. So basically what it was, at least from what I can tell, is when the grandmother got into some weird stuff. When the grandmother got a hold of the Charlie and helped raise her, apparently some rituals and stuff were performed on her. That's why she ended up the way she was. The Paimon was inside of her. When she would click, that's how you knew it was near, or its presence was near. Charlie did the thing with the pigeon because it was kind of not in her control, and it was part of the ritual, and she needed it. That's probably one reason why she would wander off and things, because she was on her own little mission. Since the grandmother wasn't ever allowed to access Peter, she had been prepping Charlie this whole time. I guess her death maybe triggered the rest of the ritual to where then they would start breaking down and prepping the male body for some reason, part of the lore of it, I guess. Annie had a direct relation with it because she kind of put all the motions in order against her will, I think, in a way. The poor husband just got screwed, really. He was just like, ugh, he was just not, he didn't know what he was getting into. So now the Paimon is inside Peter, and that's it. Like, it was all part of a very long, elaborate ritual. I don't know what's going to happen after that, and it was kind of weird, but I kind of liked some of it, and I just don't understand, like, the enormity of all of it, but it's like, I mean, it was fine. So, I mean, it's pretty involved. Like I said, it was a little slow in the middle, and I also am not sure why, if you're part of, like, a cult ritual thing, that you would take pictures and everyone's like really happy, and then you put them in a little scrapbook, and then just everyone's like, look at our ritual. It just seems like, had they not had that book, her mother may not have caught on, unless that was the point for her to catch on. I don't know. It just seems like a really long, elaborate plan that was probably at least like 8-10 years in the making, if not longer. And I also think that's one reason, like, I think it actually maybe went back deeper than that, because I think the dissociative identity disorder, maybe the grandmother had something inside of her as well, or even the Paimon inside of her, and that's why she was diagnosed with dissociative identity disorder. And then the fact that the father had schizophrenia and starved himself to death, maybe that was part of the ritual as well. The son maybe was her brother, Annie's brother, was maybe going to be used to hold the vessel, and maybe that's why he killed himself. I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of questions and thoughts to have with this movie. All in all, I liked it. Again, I don't know if I'd watch it anytime soon. It's not something you would just, like, have on. But I actually liked the ending. I thought it was kind of different and intense. And for the guy's first directorial debut, it was pretty good. It was shot well, and it was, you know, it was creepy. And I watched it, like, in a dark, stormy room with the lights off, and it was fun. So, I mean, if I had to rate it, I'm gonna go with decapitated pigeon heads. So if I had to rate it, I would give it 6.5 decapitated pigeon heads out of 10. So that is my review, this longer review, of the very involved Hereditary from 2018. Thank you for listening.